Talk by Night. 3 days they had gone on by the margin of the sea, and it was evening once more, and time of rest in the tents. And as they rested, it looked just as it had 3 days before. It might have been the same place. As the old man sat on his mat at the door of his tent, Joseph appeared before him, with pancakes and a written scroll in his hands. "The least of his slaves," he said, "bringeth to the master according to his commands." The Midianite put the baked stuff to one side. The list he unrolled, and studied the script with his head on one side. He did so, well pleased. "No blots," said he, "and that is well. But one can tell likewise that the signs are drawn with pleasure, and a sense of beauty, and are an adornment. It is to be hoped that the content agrees, so that it is not only decorative, but also practical. It is a pleasure to see one's own so cleanly set down, and the various items listed in order. The goods themselves are greasy, or they are sticky with gum. The merchant does not willingly soil his hands. He deals with them as they are written. They are there, but they are also here, clean, not stinking, easy to see. A list like this is like the car, or the spiritual body of things, alongside the real. Good, then, come hither. Thou knowest how to write, and canst also reckon somewhat, as I saw. And in thy station it lacketh thee not for readiness of speech, for it hath pleased me the way thou gavest thy lord good night 3 days past. What were thy words again?" "I know them no more," replied Joseph. "But it may be that I wished peace to thy slumbers." "No, it was pleasanter than that. But no matter. Likely there will come more occasion for such a phrase. But what I could say is this. When I have naught more important to think of, then at the third or fourth remove, I think of thee. Thy lot may be hard, since in any case thou hast seen better days, and now thou servest the travelling merchant as baker and clerk. Since, then, I purpose to dispose of thee, and, innocent of the knowledge of thy origins, to enrich myself further as much as I can, I will see to it that I look out for thee."
"That is most gracious."
"I will bring thee to a house that I know, where I have sometimes done a service to mine own and its advantage, a well-kept house, a house of honour and distinction. It is a blessing, I say, to thee to belong to such a house, be it only as the least of servants. And if there be one wherein a servant may display the finer gifts, it is this. If thou hast fortune, and I bring thee to this house, then is thy lot as favoured as, in view of thy guilt and culpableness, it could possibly fall."
"And to whom belongeth the house?"
"Yea, to whom? To a man, and a man he is, or rather a lord, a great among the great, gilded with gold of favour, a man good, stern, and holy, for whom his grave waits in the west, a shepherd of men, the living image of a god, fan-bearer on the right hand of the king, is his title. But dost thou think he beareth the fan? No, the man leaves that to others. He himself is too exalted for it. He only beareth the title. Thinkest thou I know the man, the gift of the sun? No, for I am a worm before him. He seeth me not at all. And also I saw him but once from afar in his garden, on a lofty seat, as he stretched forth his hand to command, and I made myself small, that he take not offence at me, and be distracted from his commanding, for how could I answer for it? But the upper high steward of his house, I know from face to face and word to word, who is over the stores and domestics and tradesmen, and governeth all. He loveth me, and greeteth me in blithe words when he seeth me, and saith, 'Well, old man,
So we see thee again, and thou comest with thy pack before our house to overreach us? That he saith in sheer jest, thou perceivest, thinking to flatter the merchant by calling him a cheat, and we chuckle together. To him will I show thee and propose thee, and if he be in good mood and can use a young slave for the house, so art thou provided for.
What king is that, asked Joseph, whose golden rewards the master beareth?
He wanted to learn whither he was being taken, and where the house lay for which the old man destined him. But it was not this alone made him ask. He did not know it, but his thinking and asking were controlled by traditions which worked hither from the beginnings and the times of the forefathers. Abraham spoke out of him. He who in his arrogance toward man held the view that he could serve the highest and him alone, and whose thinking and doing had excluded with contempt all lower and lesser gods, to address itself to the Most High. The grandson's voice was pitched in a lower, more worldly key, yet the question was Abraham's question. Joseph heard with indifference of the house steward, on whom, after all, according to the old man, his immediate fate depended. For the Midianite he felt contempt, because he knew only the steward, and not even the nobleman to whom the house belonged. But even about the latter he troubled himself little. Above him was a higher, a highest, of whom the old man spoke, and he was a king. Toward him alone and urgently went Joseph's thoughts and the speech of his tongue, unaware that it was guided not by chance or choice, but by inheritance and tradition.
What king? Repeated the old man.
Neb mat re amun hot pe nimuria, he said in liturgical accents, as though repeating a prayer. Joseph was startled. He had stood there, his arms folded across his back, but now he quickly released them and seized his cheeks in both palms.
That is Pharaoh, he cried.
How could he not have understood? The name which the old man chanted was known to the ends of the earth, and to the stranger people of whom Eliezer had taught him, to Tarshish and Kittim, to Ophir and Elam closing in the east. How could it have been meaningless to the instructed Joseph? Some names of the title pronounced by the Midianite, Lord of Truth is Re, Amun is Satisfied, were incomprehensible. But the Syrian addition, Nimuria, he goes to his fate, must have enlightened him. There were many kings and shepherds. Every town had one. And Joseph had stood quietly as he put his question, expecting to hear the name of some ruler of a fortified city by the sea, some Zurat, Ribadai, Adashirat, or Aziru. He had not been prepared to interpret the title in its most splendid and regal sense, in the most godlike and glorious significance which the word commands. Written inside a longish, upstanding annulet, guarded by falcon wings spread over it by the sun itself, it stood last of a glorious row of such names, losing themselves in the mist of the past, each similarly ringed and each illustrious. With each was associated the history of victorious campaigns, of far-extended boundary stones, and buildings world-famous for their magnificence, so that this last name itself connoted such a heritage of awe, such enhancement of the single life, as justified any homage, and made quite comprehensible the involuntary start which Joseph gave. But did nothing else stir in him save the respectful awe which any one else would have felt in his place? Yes, there were other and opposed feelings, whose source lay as deep as that question about the highest, and with these he involuntarily began to control the first ones. Scorn and derision at the shameless mighty of this earth. Private rebellion in God's name against Nimrod's assembled powers. Such sentiments as these it was, which made him at length take his hands from his face and repeat his cry in the tone of a simple statement.
That is Pharaoh.
Certainly, said the old man. That is the great house that hath made great the house to which I will bring thee, and will offer thee to my friend the overseer to try thy fortune.
Then wilt thou lead me down to Mizraim, into the land of mud? Asked Joseph, and felt his heart beat.
The old man, his head bent on one shoulder, gave it a shake.
The question is like thee again. I know already from Kedemah, my son, that out of childish conceit thou imaginest we lead thee hither or thither, though in truth we are taking our way where we take it, even without thee, and thou only comest thither where our way leadeth us. I do not travel to Egypt that I may bring thee thither, but because I have business there which will enrich me. I will buy things there which they are skillful in producing, and are much sought after, such as glazed collars, camp stools with pretty little legs, headrests, draught boards, chess boards, and pleated linen aprons. These I will buy in the workshops and in the bazaars, as cheap as the gods of the land will let me, and take them back over the mountains of Canaan, the Retenu and Amor, into Mitanni land on the Euphrates, and to the country of King Hattusil, where they have an eye for them, and will spend money recklessly. Thou speakest of the land of mud, as though it were a land of filth, baked out of excrement, like a bird's nest, and like an unclean stall. And yet it is the land whither to travel again I am resolved, and where I shall perhaps be able to leave thee, the finest land in all the round of earth, with such exquisite customs that thou wilt seem to thyself like an ox before whom one plays the lute. Thou, wretched Amu, wilt make great eyes when thou seest the country beside the river of God, which is called there the Lands, because it is two lands, and double-crowned. But Mempi, the house of Ptah, holds the balance between them. There range unthinkably vast spaces that antechamber the desert. There crouches the lion in the headcloth, Hor im Achet, created before time, the mystery of the ages, at whose breast the king fell asleep, the child of Tot, and in dreams had his head lifted up with most exalted promise. Thine eyes will stand out of thy head when thou seest the marvels and all the splendor and choiceness of the land that is called Kempt, because it is black with fruitfulness, not red like the poverty-stricken desert. But from what is it fruitful? Because of the river of God, and from that alone. For it hath its rain and its fructifying semen not in heaven, but on earth. And it is the god Hapi, the strong bull, who spreads himself out above it, and stands over it full of blessing the space of a season, leaving behind the blackness of his power, wherein one may sow and harvest a hundredfold fruit. But thou speakest as though it were a dunghill.
Joseph hung his head. He had learned that he was on his way to the kingdom of the dead, for the habit of regarding Egypt as the underworld, and its inhabitants as a people of Sheol, was born with him, and never had he heard otherwise, especially from Jacob. So then he was to be sold into the melancholy netherworld. The brothers had sold him down thither. The well had been its appropriate entrance. It was very sad. He could have wept. Yet joy in the appropriateness balanced the sadness. His view that he was dead, and the blood of the beast had been in truth his blood, being so neatly confirmed by the old man's disclosures. He had to smile, however near to tears on his own and Jacob's account. Precisely down thither should he go, into the land which was the object of his father's pronounced aversion, Hagar's home, the monkey land of Egypt. He recalled the prejudiced description with which Jacob had sought to make this land intolerable to his son, regarding it, without any actual knowledge, in the light of his own hostile and horrified principles, as the seat of worship of the past, of dalliance with death, of insensibility to sin. Joseph had always been inclined to a blithe mistrust of the justice of the picture, to that sympathetic curiosity which is regularly the consequence of parental moralizing and warning. If the good, worthy, and didactic man had known that his lamb was traveling Egyptwards, to the land of Ham, the Bear, as he called it, because it was black on account of the black fruitful soil which its God gave it. The confusion of thought was right indicative of the pious prejudice of his judgment, Joseph said to himself with a smile. But the bond between son and father was not one of opposites alone. True, it was a diabolic joke that he should be traveling toward the utterly taboo. It was a youthful triumph thus to coquet with the moral terrors of the underworld, yet with it, in his blood, was a mute resolve which must have gladdened the father's heart, the resolve of the child of Abram not to let his eyes run over at sight of the elegance and the marvel so praised by the Ishmaelite, quite definitely not to admire too warmly the splendid civilization which awaited him. A deep and native spirit of mockery drew down the corners of his mouth at the mere thought of that elegance, and his contempt was to be a shield and buckler against the timidity which results from too great reverence. He asked, looking up, "Is the house to which thou wilt bring me at Mempi, the dwelling of Ptah?" "Oh, no," the old man replied. "We must go farther up, up the river, out of the land of the serpent into the land of the vulture. Thou askest in thy simplicity, for when I said to thee that the master of the house is fan-bearer on the king's right hand, of course that means he must be where his majesty the good God is, and whose house is at Waysay, the city of Amun."